Hello.
So I don't know that, I mean, I like that we have more room to breathe, Ryan, but I do miss you. It's good to catch up.
I miss you too.
And I am so glad that you were on vacation.
Yes, I'm quite glad that I was on vacation too. It was delightful. San Francisco is a wonderful place. I'm sure that when you go on vacation somewhere, you get a bit of a skewed view of what it is to be in that city. Like, I'm sure to live there is like a whole other thing. Usually by the end of like 6 days of vacation, I'm like, I'm ready to go home now. And this, I was like, maybe I should just stay another week. So, for whatever that's worth.
Do you ever think about leaving?
All the time. But I don't, I also like, I don't think I could ever live out there because I would be so far away from family. Unless all of my family magically ended up on the West Coast, which I think would be doubtful. Yeah, that would be highly doubtful, I think. I also have a great teacher here. I don't know that I would want to leave that anytime soon. Those things definitely hold me back. But I think about the possibility of moving. I'm almost been in Boston 10 years now, so. The thought certainly has crossed my mind as to whether I will continue to live here or think about moving somewhere else.
Huh. I just was reflecting on I have a great teacher here. I don't know that I've ever felt strongly enough about a teacher to not want to move because of one. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully aware of how rare that type of relationship is.
So,
But there will come a point, and this has always been part of the agreement in working with Tom, where he will teach me all of the things that he thinks it's worthwhile for me to learn, and that I want to learn. And at some point, we will shift from it being, a mentor-mentee relationship into being more of a collegial. Is that the, how you say that word?
collegial.
Collegial relationship. And that's nowhere near happening because he knows a lot of things. But we are sort of entering into the like last fourth of what I had, when I started working with him regularly, requested to learn. So, maybe there'll be at some point where most of our conversations could not have to happen in person, but I also, there's just something really wonderful and supportive about having a teacher that I go and see every week and learn shit from. So, yeah.
So you practiced yoga in San Francisco.
I
Can you
did.
tell me about your experience with practicing yoga
What a
in San
great
Francisco?
setup.
It was really effortless, too.
It was quite effortless. So it was interesting. So I went to two classes and then practiced a bunch on my own. And I was curious because a couple of weeks ago you had asked when was the last time I had been to a public class. And what it occurred to me that even in the instances where I had been to a public class in Boston, like all of those instances were people that I knew personally. So Megan, Lindsay, Fez, etc. These are people who I have friendships with. So it's a going into a classroom that I did not really know much about was a super interesting thing to go do. And one of the classes I went to was up in Oakland with this teacher named Jin Sung. And it was a really fantastic class, really, I mean, exactly my type of studio. Clearly, Jin Sung has, been teaching for a super long time, is very sort of Iyengar-esque type class. There were some well-known yoga teachers in the room taking class with him, so I was like, oh, okay. I've come to the right place, apparently. But one of the things that was really interesting about that class, as enjoyable as it was, it still was. I felt that I was very unclear as to what the why was. Like, it felt like very much the why of the class was to do these poses well and to sort of progress in one's ability to do asana. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. Like, if you want to progress in your ability to do asana, then by all means progress in your ability to asana. But I was very keenly aware of, like, oh, okay, like there's a certain set of influences at play that are still biased towards we just need to do the pose well. Even if it's not do the pose right, we just need to do the pose sort of in a way that vaguely looks like, the picture in the book, right? So as enjoyable as that class was, and as much as I took away from that class and, got to do some things that I don't normally get to do in yoga classes or don't normally practice on my own, I still was like, oh, okay, like I would come to this class every week, but I would still need someone who was actually interested in, okay, well, why is this helpful? Or why are we exploring these actions and shapes and postures? And it could very well be that, like, that is, over the course of, a great number of weeks of going to that class, I would get more of a sense of what the why is, right? Like that's totally possible. I was just there as a drop-in. It was interesting, for sure.
And what about the other class?
So the other class was a flow class. I believe it was an all levels flow.
But
And
even low levels, Ryan, even low levels?
even moderate levels, even high levels, even sporadic levels, even what all of the adjectives that you could surmise. And it was really great. I really actually I'm kind of impressed how all of the Yoga Tree studios have maintained the same vibe that I remember them having before they got taken over by Yoga Works.
How do you think they did that? Because
I learned that the teachers kind of pushed back strongly like very strongly. And it appears to me that there's just sort of run a little bit outside of they're still owned by the company, but they're just sort of a little bit of a separate entity.
So that requires having a group of teachers that cares enough to collectively push back.
Yes.
Huh. I'd like to say more, but I don't want to get
Yeah.
fired.
You are,
Fired!
why would you not want, you're already fired.
No, I know. No, I'm on my, this is a, June 4th is my last slow flow, and then
Okay.
I'll teach visiting spots.
I got you. I got you. So what was it? I mean, the class was fine. It was a really lovely class and nothing. I got to hang out with the teacher Danny, who's really sweet, a little bit before class. But what I was really conscious of, I mean, I would say it wasn't quite the size of the back room at Back Bay, but like you could probably fit. Well, let me think. Probably like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you might have been able to fit like 60 in that room comfortably. But it was a full class. Let's just put it that way. It was a full class. And even though like I had met and had a conversation with the teacher and I had been in that space before, and I was still struck with how sort of on guard my nervous system was because I just sort of didn't really know what was about to happen. And to the point where I actually didn't feel comfortable lying down for Shavasana. And I don't honestly don't think that this has
Wait,
anything to
what?
do with the teacher. I was just like, it will be more, quieting for me to sit in meditation than to lie down right now, for whatever reason. I don't think it was a heightened sense of anxiety. I think I was just because it's been so long since I've been in a classroom who's like, I don't know the teacher very well. Haven't practiced a lot in that space. I think I was just more keenly aware of like, oh wow, like my nervous system is a little bit on alert in this type of a space. And it's something, again, it's not that I think it was a heightened experience. I just think because of the contrast of, what I normally do in a given week, and being in a new space and a new environment, I was just keenly aware of like, oh, like there's really no amount of like shifting the tone of my nervous system that can happen in this room right now. And it even happened in a similar way. When I went to a restorative class later that week with a different teacher, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna like go in the corner and kind of face the wall. Like, I'm just gonna and just sort of take care of myself in the corner over here. And it wasn't until like the very last pose that I was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to like drop into Shavasana. I mean, it was a very simple restorative class. It was like a three pose, 90-minute situation. But I was just really, really struck by that. And again, I don't think it was heightened. I don't think it was the cause or the fault of the teacher. I just think I was noticing a dynamic that, in a situation that I don't always put myself in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
But it made me like loop back around to like all of these conversations about flip chips and about creating a container and environment where people feel welcome and safe and where the reality and truth of people's own historical trauma is you know, at least sort of broadly taken into an account, if not specifically. And I did notice, like, the few times that I got an assist, I was a little bit, like, jumpy. I was like, oh, okay. I don't really know your hands right now. Though I have to say, with Jin Sung, that wasn't the case. That was not the case. There's a way to communicate with your hands that you know what you're, you know, there's a firm enough contact that I was like, okay, this, there's a clear objective at hand here. But that was just really, really interesting to me. And again, I don't want anyone to make, like, I had some, like, horrible, they were lovely classes. I had a lovely time. It was just aware of that, dynamic, very, very clearly in those moments.
Isn't that good? That's awesome. Because I think it's easy to forget.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taking public classes, and I'm sort of having, like, an opposite experience. I'm just at a particular place where I'm so, and I don't mean this in, like, a complainy way, just a statement of fact. I'm very, very tired. And so when I get to a point of fatigue that I'm at, certain veils are dropped, and they're the veils of, like, being self-conscious, you know, or, like, feeling like I don't have the energy for certain. I'm able to practice in a very authentic way because I'm stripped down. So for me lately, I've been very, like,
can you explain that more?
So when I'm sort of at my normal baseline, I think I'm a lot more anxious in the context of a yoga classroom. And when I am so tired that system doesn't have the gas it needs to function, I'm at a place where I'm almost receptive. It's almost like I did acid. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe I can see it through this teacher's lens in a way that's more forgiving for me and more like, all right, man, I'm not going to do that, or I am going to do that, and I'm just going to be here, and I'm less critical. And I'm not saying that is a good thing. I'm not saying, oh, I'm finally less critical. No. I'm just saying that function isn't sitting in the driver's seat as predominantly as maybe it does when I'm feeling healthier.
Sure.
So it's an interesting lens shift for me to take class from that place.
Yeah.
And it's freeing in some ways. And I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I should be sleeping or I should be resting, but my body is also craving a public class.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make this fucking decision that sucks of, like, both things are taking care of myself. Which one is doing more harm? I'm not sure. I don't know that I have the answer right.
Yeah.
But there I was, you know, in a class doing what I could. And caring a little bit less.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the juice. I don't have the juice to give a shit. and then I don't know if this is the right time to pivot our conversation to anxiety and aggravation, but it feels like it might be.
Isn't that what we've been talking about?
Yeah, you're right.
In a roundabout way.
All right, so I'm going to scooch it a little bit more towards the aggravation front then.
You're going to give it a little tap. Just a little, nudge.
Light fingered tap.
Uh-oh.
So I've been like, turns out I'm like a deeply angry person.
Oh, okay. Join the club.
Turns out I'm fucking angry. And one of the things that makes me even angrier is when people aren't angry, or people that vilify anger. You know, and all of this is in a yoga context. Like, I think yoga can be used as like this really shitty manipulative way to sublimate emotions.
Yes.
And to vilify emotions as if certain ones are acceptable and other, and some aren't, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Especially anger. Anger is a big one.
Yeah.
Man, and then I thought about that because, I don't know, I left a yoga class and I walked out on the street and I almost got hit by a car. And, you know, instead of being peaceful about it, I was like, motherfucking, fucking, fucking. And I, like, flipped a park bench and, like, set myself on fire and ran through the town. Like... And I was like, wow, my yoga's really not working. Like, I had that thought. And
yeah,
then I was like,
yeah.
I was like, stop. Stop. Stop right there.
Stop, yeah.
Is my yoga not working?
Yeah, what does that even mean?
What does that fucking mean? Exactly. So I think my yoga is working. I think it's working just fine because I'm giving myself permission to experience a range of authentic emotions.
Yeah.
And that, I don't, if that's not yoga, I'm not quite sure what is.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, so side note. Taught a class the other day. And in that class was somebody from out of town.
Oh.
And you ever just get the vibe when someone walks in, you're like, oh no, they already don't like me.
All the time.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and oftentimes we're wrong.
Like, yeah.
And sometimes we're fucking spot on. But, like, you know, sometimes I'm wrong. They just have, like, resting bitch face, or I have misread the vibe around them, or any other list myriad.
Or you correctly read the vibe about them, but it has nothing to do with you.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
it could just be, like, they're in town for work or something and they had to like get the fuck out of there to come take a yoga, you know what I mean? Like, it could be anything like that, but usually in that case, like, you see within the first like 10 minutes of practice that they're like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, when it's clearly some external force, it becomes pretty clear to me, like, when they initially get onto their mat, that there's like a settling that goes, that, and I'm like, oh, okay, they're having a day.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yes. Yes. And then I feel relief when I see that. But this was not that case.
Yeah.
This was somebody walked in, I got a vibe, red flag goes up, and, you know, usually what I do is I put a container around that person in my mind and I just leave them in their container of wishing them well.
Yes.
I leave them. That's what my higher self does when I'm rested.
Yes.
Now, when I'm not my best self, actually, that's not true. I think there's total value to this other approach that I took, which was, this person was intentionally, like, really intentionally, I experienced it as disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
Or she walked in, sized me up, and decided, not because of an injury or because of being tired or anything, she just didn't like what I had to say about yoga and didn't care for the class. And so made decision after decision after decision to communicate that to me through her body.
Yeah.
And I know that that is an absolute minefield that I just laid out. You know?
Yeah.
How the fuck do I know?
Yeah.
I could be very, very, very wrong. And I could also be spot on, because I feel like that's the thing that happens. We communicate to our teachers by doing things or not doing things, intentionally or unintentionally. We are constantly in conversation. One party is being vocal, and this is all a complex power dynamic, and the other party is, you know, and I will always, always champion skipping things and taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Always. And if she had just been skipping stuff and like just doing her own thing in, of course that's fine, but there was something about every choice she was making was like from a different practice. It was as if another teacher had told her to do it a certain way. And even though I was framing my cueing as, hey, even if you normally do blank, today we're going to experiment with doing blank. You know, making like an acknowledgement, like there's no one correct way to do this. It's just all experiment with this tiny like tweak. And it was, you know, she was doing her own thing. And I felt really aggravated.
Yeah.
And then I like remembered that aggravation is like an opportunity to pause and just fucking notice. Like, well, why do I care?
Yeah.
You know, does it cut to the underbelly of my worth as a human, as a teacher, as an adult? Like, and then I'm like, no, I don't give a shit. You know, and then I care less. But I bring it up because when I was rage texting you the other day, it was that exchange with that particular person that triggered my thought about prudishness that I was so mad about. I just happened to catch her facial expression every like sort of semi irreverent joke I made or comment that was unexpected or didn't sit, you know, within the confines of what's acceptable to talk about in a yoga class. Like, I could see how disgusted she was. She was just disgusted. That was her resting face, was disgust. And I was like, I had this thought that was like, you just make me want to say more inflammatory things. Like, your prudishness. You don't have to think I'm funny. You don't have to think I'm funny, but get the fuck for it, man. Like, why do you have... It was clear that, like, she wanted something more serious. And, like, this hunger for, like, almost like this purity of... almost an academic approach that is whitewashed and reverent, so fucking reverent and serious and mindful, that to me is just the most disingenuous fucking puppet show that one can put on as a yoga teacher, to get up there and be that classist that there is, like, it's the kind of silence that is devoid of meaning. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, there is pregnant mindfulness. There is thoughtful mind. There's mindfulness with purpose. There's quiet and stillness for purpose. And then there's also just that, you know, somebody took an iron and fucking smoothed out every wrinkle. Anyways, that's what she wanted. And that's what I'm not. And I got very aggravated and angry and realize that the heart of those emotions for me is when I perceive prudishness. So you like how I tied that all together?
When you perceive, what do you say more about that?
And I have to question this: is prudishness the right word? Is that too gendered? It might be too gendered because prudishness has been used against women for a really long time.
That's true, but I don't necessarily see that word as gendered, but that is probably because of my personal experience with gender and sexuality.
I certainly don't mean the term in a gendered sense, but I'm just pausing to reflect that it, in my experience, it tends to, like, when we look at literature, we've thrown around the term prude, like, mostly at women for being sexually reclusive.
Yes.
Anyways, that's neither here nor there. What was the question? You asked me about perceiving it when I perceive prudishness, when I suspect
that is a trigger for anger.
Yeah, when I think somebody wants something classy. The type of person that would use the term classy. does that make sense? Like, that to me is like a, and it's deep in my own personal story that comes from, that I have to be like aware of, like, this is not necessarily an entirely intellectual response I'm having, but you know, personal one. But I think one of the most upsetting things to me is like thinking about class discrepancy in yoga classes and looking around the room and saying who can afford to be here and who cannot, who can afford to be a yoga teacher and who cannot.
Or, you know, or on the level of sort of, you're right, there may be a more inclusive word than prudishness that's escaping me. But what's not allowed to be included in the context of your yoga practice? What aspects of yourself do you have to leave at the door in order to participate? And some of that's, you know, just the agreement you make when you come into a yoga classroom. But some of that is not helpful, right? You know, do you have to feel like you have to leave some, you know, aspect of your sexuality or your gender or your, or your race or your whatever the case may be, like do you have to sort of tap down some aspect of self in order to be welcomed into a classroom? And, you know, noticing when on the opposite, or maybe not the opposite but a slightly different spin on the interaction, is like when someone says or does something within the context of a yoga class that makes me like do that little like cringe or like clutching of the pearls, I pause and be like, oh wait, why? No, that's totally fine. Like, but that reflex is just also shows like where there's work that can be done.
Yes. That's exactly it. Pearl clutching.
Yes. And in a reflexive way, not in a mildly amusing way.
I don't know. I feel part of our job. I think part of the job of a yoga teacher, and that's a big statement, is to get people to clutch their fucking pearls. In class, there should be a goddamn pearl clutch.
I mean, I don't know. It's because it's those moments too, though, where you might, you know, I'm not saying that in this particular case, but like, when is it? When is it appropriate to sort of physically or rhetorically challenge students in your classroom? And when does that challenge, physically, rhetorically, whatever it is, make the classroom feel like less of a safe space?
Oh. I don't know. I think I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very I don't know moment. And that's why when people get really black and white about either trauma sensitivity or what a teacher should and shouldn't say, I get a little... Yoga isn't black and white. That's the whole fucking point. It's nuanced. I mean, yes, there are things that are gross and that are tangible that we can talk about with certain amounts of clarity, but at some point in practice, we do have to begin to have a conversation of nuance and subtlety. And and any sense of black and whiteness, whether that be in terms of the topic or like a topic that you've brought up in class or a word that you use in class or just in the realm of what is the right. And we're back.
What the fuck just happened? I don't know.
I had to unplug everything and plug everything back in. So
I had to hit my monitor. It's the only thing that ever works.
So at this moment, I don't entirely know what got recorded and what didn't. So we're just going to try to dive back in and I will make an awkward splice as I see fit. So we were talking about clutching the pearls.
Yes, pearl clutching.
And, you know, and this is something that I was sort of reminded of where this idea that whenever you have that moment, it's actually like a second to self-reflect and be like, what is actually making me do this? Like, what is conditioning me to like be sort of aghast that someone mentioned that? And it particularly comes up, you know, there are definitely, this doesn't so much happen in yoga classes, but if you go to enough Dharma talks, enough Buddhist teachers, there are teachers who are a little bit more cutting. There are teachers that are a little bit more humorous, you know, but the teachers that kind of are a little bit cutting and really try to push and challenge, like, I always appreciate those teachers because I notice when I sort of grip around what they're saying and am able to be like, oh, why am I gripping around that? What is actually making me uncomfortable about that? It's because they're asking me to challenge something about my view, usually, or bringing something to light that I don't necessarily want to look at. So, you know, I don't necessarily look at that the same way when we're talking about physical instruction, right? But in terms of just the general things that are said in terms of setting context and view and intention in the yoga practice, I always try to just be like, oh, if I'm kind of grimacing around what that person just said, why is that? I could have very good reason. Like, it could be because it's bullshit, right? But it also could be because I'm just being reactive.
I love it. Yeah. And so for me, the gripping is a really apt word because I'll either grip because they're saying something I'm definitely not ready for.
Sure.
And I
sure,
have a really good example of that that I'll bring up in a moment because I'm on his website. And and then there's the gripping of no. What you're saying, I believe to be false.
Sure.
Like undeniably, categorically cruel or false.
Yes.
So those are my two grippings, and I grip pretty frequently. But the rare grip for me is when somebody challenges something that I'm not altogether ready to hear. And I just say that because I'm not like 21 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and I did acid and I am a fucking philosophy minor. Like, yeah, that's all you really need to be not shocked by much. An example for me is when, you know, years ago I was taking, I don't know, Aaron Cantor was teaching some part of our 200-hour teacher training. And I was like, no. What is this?
Yeah.
No. And this is uncomfortable. This hurts. This is, and you know, to be fair, I left his class with like black and blue knees because we were doing like non quote unquote traditional.
I think I was there that yoga. Day. I think I like yoga. Tried to do part of that class and then was like, I'm out.
Yeah, we were like racing across the room in Dolphin on blankets.
Yeah.
So the blanket's under your forearm and we're racing each other. And so I wasn't ready for that specifically. But years later, and after some conversations with him, it dawned on me that I actually have a lot more in common with him than I ever thought I did when I was first exposed.
Yeah.
You know? And his philosophy is kind of like, Jesus, get the fuck over it. There's so many more ways to move than, like, you know, just the standing series. Like, it's okay to be human and move all the ways a human moves, and all of that can be yoga.
Yes. Or not yoga, as he sometimes tries to frame it. Which I always roll my eyes when he frames it that way. It's like, you're doing fucking yoga.
You're doing fucking yoga.
No, I've always, as much as I don't necessarily find what Aaron teaches in the classroom to be accessible, every time I have ever had a conversation with him about yoga, we're certainly more on the same page than not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the only place I disagree with him is accessibility.
Yeah.
Because I like to think that my philosophical approach to yoga, as you're saying, is, you know, very much akin to his.
Yeah.
I just also want what's offered in the classroom to have components that are available to everybody that walks in there, depending on who walks in there.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, to be fair, he could be doing something totally different, you know, so if he's started...
I have no idea what he's doing now.
Yeah, neither do I. And you know, I'm looking at his website, and this website is terrible. Such a magnificent creature and such a terrible website.
I'll let him know next time I see him.
How did this come up? Oh, because the gripping. Yeah, but yeah, my point in that is, you know, I had many a pearl clutch moment with him that was a little bit like, but this isn't yoga.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, fuck you, Kate. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I love when people are in my class having the pearl clutch. This isn't yoga. Okay, well then why are you here?
Yeah.
You get up here and tell me what the fuck yoga is.
Yeah. Also, you know, I feel like... Was this a slow flow class?
Yes.
Okay, so
say it.
I'm pretty sure that just doesn't mean anything anymore. As we've talked about, it's just a placeholder for like something else. It's like you got your heated flow, you got your vinyasa, you got your ashtanga, you got your Iyengar, and then you have your slow flow. We don't really know what this is, but it's slow flow.
No, Ryan, let's be honest. It means something. I am not adhering to what it means.
What do you think it means that you're not adhering to what it means?
Slow flow means we're just going to move at a slightly slower pace than the normal one breath per movement cadence in a vinyasa class. It means that the dog whistle elements of what it means are, this is welcome for everybody. This is good for beginners. That's the subtle messaging that,
which is not not the case, certainly, at the studio. I mean, that's why there's some of the slow flow classes, at least at Down Under, are leveled. I don't know if they are anymore, actually.
There's one, but I don't know what's going on with that.
Historically, like, that was what Barbara called her classes. So that is slow flow from that dynamic. But Barbara's classes, you know, except for even the level 2-1-2 class that Barbara used to teach on Thursday mornings, that was a hard class. We didn't do anything like crazy. We weren't headstanding or dropping back, like we would sometimes do in the Tuesday 2 to 4 class. But the few times that I would go to that Thursday level 1-2 class, that shit was hard. Because a lot of those people in that class were there for the level 1-2 because they just didn't really feel like doing any of the fancy stuff anymore. They're just like, fuck that shit. And so it was oftentimes like way more subtle than the level 2-3 or 3-4. So there, at least in the context of the studio where you teach it, like that is a fundamental understanding, though I realize not the reality.
Yeah, and so when I
especially
was
since
doing
Barbara
slow flow
left.
And when I was doing slow flow at Yoga Works, it was a response to all of the vinyasas being like very challenging.
Yes.
And very quick, and in some ways potentially intimidating to somebody that's new, you know, and also in a really packed class, whereas slow flow, smaller room, numbers constrained, we're going to use a bolster, but it's vinyasa. And so now I'm about to switch over and I'm letting go of my slow flow at Yoga Works on Monday night to teach a 6 p.m. vinyasa on a Thursday night. And I bring that up because we had a lot of conversations about, are we going to call it flow or slow flow? And what does that mean? And we realized that they were two different languages from two different studios.
Yes.
You know? And so my slow flow at Down Under is a little bit more like just flow.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so I'm going to, and this is where I think of you whenever I'm having these conversations where I'm like, you know, it's just yoga. It's just whatever
it's just
I do.
Yoga.
It's just, you know, Kate, Paige, and yoga. Like, I don't know. And I don't, you know, and some days I ask people to pull out the bolsters and some days I don't. And at the end of the day, as I get older, I just have to like not worry as much about what the class is called and continue to just teach who's in the room.
I also can't imagine, and this is not just a function of this is a function of all big studios everywhere that are not like, with maybe the exception of Core Power, because like Core Power is a thing. It's one thing with moderate variants, but it's very clear what those variants are, right? Like it's a product. It's one product. You have to teach that product.
Uh-huh.
So there's a clarity to that, which I appreciate. I'll never go to the class, but there's a clarity to that that I appreciate. But I can't imagine, I mean, even just looking through the yoga studio schedules in San Francisco, I was like, I don't fucking know where I should go. I have no sense of what this class is going to be like. I don't know. Danny's all levels flow was exactly what I would have expected from a 6 p.m. all levels flow, on a Wednesday in San Francisco. That was like, oh, okay, this is it. This is, you know, what I would expect. Some other classes on other schedules that are like, I have no idea what that means. I have no clue what that class is going to be like. And I just feel like I don't know. I'm really content with my simplification of the class names. Very content with it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty forward thinking. I mean, it makes me uncomfortable, but that's sometimes good.
What do you mean it makes you uncomfortable? Say more about that.
I like little indications of what I might expect. I like that. Because otherwise I have to read the teacher's bio and then guess based on keywords that show up there what may or may not be happening in class. And sometimes I just want to know, are you going to fucking make me do 6 sun salutations? Because I don't want to. Or Are you not going to make me do any sun salutations? Because I want to.
If there's a flow class, and I don't know, I guess I just, like, if I'm going to go to a class, like, I know that, I mean, even in the, in Jin Sung's class, we did sun salutations, and I was like, oh, okay. But it was made up for the fact that, like, between every pose, we were strapped to the wall doing downward facing dog and tractioning out. So I was like, okay, I will take this trade-off.
I like that, yeah.
So I just feel like in this world where we have to have yoga be a product, I'd much rather have people have to be like either read the teacher's bio or ask some friends and be like, hey, what's Ryan Hill's class like? Do you think I like it? Like I would much rather have it be that way. And I think we are slowly seeing that there's a certain point of expansion which things start to not work so well in terms of the typical yoga studio model.
No comment. So many comments. No comment.
I think I needed that to be a little bit more like Gregorian chant.
I've got no comment. No, there needs to be like, I have to go down a fifth or something.
Yes, exactly. Know. Yeah. We'll do a few.
Here's what I know, Ryan.
Tell me all that you know.
I worked for a long time at an independent bookstore. And
which is still there, yes?
Yes. And still independently owned. And it was owned majority, but two of the three owners were women. The manager was a woman, and it was basically women run. And somewhere along the line, and then I started working for Lynn, independently owned. And when we were bought out by YogaWorks, I think I forgot to factor that value system into my decision to stay as long as I did.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I was like, oh, it's fine, it's YogaWorks, whatever. I sort of bought the line about all the opportunity. And there might be tons of opportunity that I've
given up. If you're willing to, like,
I don't know.
Wait for the phone call, right?
I don't know, Ryan.
I said too much.
To wait for the phone call, yeah. I just realized that I think it is very important that independent bookstores survive, because otherwise the Amazon algorithm can very easily censor books.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that there is a very practical and terrifying reason why it's important to support local independent bookstores and small presses, for that matter. People that are willing to publish unpopular ideas.
And independent, locally owned yoga studios.
Yes, for the same reason.
Of which there are becoming fewer and fewer.
And fewer.
And fewer.
Independent yoga studio is crucial for the preservation of diversity of ideas and people that have their ear on the ground and their finger on the local pulse.
Yes.
And that aren't adhering necessarily to scripts of what yoga is allowed to be.
Yes.
So I don't know why more of that conversation isn't happening.
More of what conversation?
That conversation.
The independent conversation?
Yeah. Don't you feel like it was like a thing that people talked about, and like American Express had the like independent Saturdays?
Oh, like more generally within the context of capitalism.
Buy local, shop local.
Whatever it was, I can't remember. But yeah, I feel like maybe there was more of that at some point. But I also feel like...
Think global, shop local. That was it.
So I think what we're, what's challenging is that, it's hard for the local studios or the local bookstores or the local coffee shops or whatever to be able to compete on the same level of like just getting people into the door. Certainly some of that's possible via Facebook, but like these places don't have like entire fucking like marketing departments
No, they
working
have
for
like
them.
one or two people doing it for them.
Yes, and in the case of yoga studios, for it to be more than two people, that's like exceedingly rare.
Yeah, and those people are often also teachers.
And often also the owners,
Yeah.
right? Like it's a challenge. I just don't know. Because I've been thinking about this a lot. Like I do value the ability to have my own space to teach what it is that I would like to teach. And at the same time, don't what I enjoy is teaching, not running a business. Now, of course, teaching is running a business. Yes, I understand that, but like there's a scale of how much admin work one has to do, right? And I'm not sure that I would ever trade off fully the admin work if it meant having to sort of be a part of a large studio. Like I don't know that that would ever be, I don't know that I would ever really feel comfortable with that. Because I totally understand that there are local studios, that it does make sense to grow, right? Like it just makes sense. Because you kind of can get a little bit more money flowing into the collective pot and be able to distribute that and sort of replicate things, and potentially be able to have more teachers sort of work for you more full time as opposed to just this sort of like having two or three classes here. I totally get that and totally love that. But I don't know where the sweet spot is, where the yoga starts to get lost. That's always my
I think the answer is
well, I think
decisions based on when all of your decisions are based on the probability and possibility of expansion, that's the problem.
or the problem or the
Or like being beholden to stakeholders. Who are your stakeholders?
Sure.
Who are your
You know
stockholders?
that is obviously a big barrier to once that and becomes part of the conversation that creates issues, right? But still, I think there's I haven't really seen it. I haven't really seen it work super. I haven't seen it work well. I think the best place that I've experienced it was at Back Bay those last like year or two. But that was at the, I think that wasn't perfect either, because it was causing numerous people to burn out. But I was really, at that time confident in what I was teaching then. Of course, hindsight, there are things that I've majorly shifted and changed, right? And we were doing a good job working together as a team, certainly Rachel and I and Lynn and Caitlin and Renee with the trainings. Like we were doing a fine job running those programs and keeping the studios running. So I don't know. It's a There's just got to be a better model, and I don't know what that looks like. But I also think that that will shift slowly as there are bigger and broader conversations about what yoga is going to look like moving forward, happening. So that's all I'll say on that. Do you have anything else to add?
No, we're going to have to put a pin in some of the other topics I wanted to cover today.
Okay. I wanted to make a couple of recommendations of things to watch slash listen to. There was a interview between Matthew Remsky and Karen Rain. Who's been one of the most vocal people speaking about her experience being assaulted by Patabi Joyce. That is up on Matthew's website. It is hard to get through, but important to get through, I think. So I'll put a link to that in the
Awesome.
show notes. There's also a really, really fantastic recording of a talk with Reverend Angel Kyodo Williams, who's one of the authors of Radical Dharma, that was just released on Shambhala, New York's weekly podcast, which is called Meditation in the City. It's the most recent episode. I will put a link to that in the notes as well. It's just always great to hear her speak. She's really inspiring and thoughtful. I feel like there was a third one. Oh, and I actually thought the conversation that Jay had with Matthew Remsky is worth listening to.
The somatic dominance to trauma awareness?
Yes. Did you listen to that at all, or?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I think that's also worth listening to.
Oh, we have homework.
We have homework. And I think that's all I got, Kate. Do you want to do the honors of closing us out?
If you have questions, comments, concerns, please shoot us an email at unrolledpodcast@unrolledpodcast.com.
What is that accent?
I don't know. It's actually more of a slur. We're on Instagram and Facebook. Don't worry, we won't spam you. If you have
Okay, Kate, cut out. So I will finish this.
any luck or two, that'll help. If you want to hear us tackle any particular topic, or if something we've said feels really wrong to you, we absolutely welcome your ideas. Please take the time to shoot us an email, and we will absolutely bring it up on air. All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.